Good evening. Welcome to City of Angels, Families and Recovery. My name is Bill, and I'm here with my lovely wife, Kathy.
Hi, everybody.
And we want to welcome you to tonight's program on communication. We'd like to say that you can reach Kathy and I, if you'd like to email us, at Kathy and Bill, and that's Kathy with a C, at cityofangelsnj.org. We'd love to hear from you. Give us some encouragement, questions, anything you'd like to share. You can also find us on Facebook. So if you go City of Angels, Families and Recovery, you'll find us on Facebook. Love to see you out there. Please give us a like if you can. If you need assistance or intervention right now, you can call City of Angels at 609-910-4942. Welcome to tonight's program, Communications. So, babe, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right, honey. Are you having a good time?
Yeah, I'm having a good time. Matter of fact, Chuck and I went out to the movies, and now I'm over his house.
Oh, the line's very bad. I really can't hear you. What did you say? You went to the movies?
Yeah, well, and at Chuck's house, and I'm working with his daughter, Kaylee. She's got a project for school about the Sudan. Do you know anything about Sudan?
Well, honey, is Kaylee suing her dad?
No, he's not.
You're saying there.
No. Sudan.
Sue and Dan? Oh, yeah, of course. But things like that aren't for Kaylee to hear, you know, lips and kissing and nonsense like that. Where'd you hear that about them?
Chuck and Kaylee. But I don't understand. Sudan is a country in Africa.
Sue and Dan are going to Africa? Oh, my. I wonder if Dan's wife knows. Sweetheart, I have to call her.
She's okay. Do you know anything about Sudan?
How did you find out about that?
Well, Chuck and Kaylee, they're talking to me about that.
Really? Well, all I know is Dan gave Sue a huge diamond necklace and a bun in the oven, and now Kathy is divorcing him. Very ugly. Sue can barely hold her head up in public now.
I don't understand. So what you're telling me is that people are... Chuck is being sued... I don't understand. It's something about heavy. So Sue has heavy necklaces on, buns in the oven. She's a baker. I'm very confused. I don't know what any of this has to do with Sudan. Tonight's topic is communication. And my wife and I don't think we did too well in that. But anyway, that's our topic for tonight. We're going to have fun with it. You're going to learn many things about communication. Kath, can you give us our opening charge?
Sure, Bill. I took it out of the language of letting go again. And it's from April 15th, and it's called Communication. Part of owning our power is learning to communicate clearly, directly, and assertively. We don't have to beat around the bush in our conversation to control the reactions of others. Guilt-producing comments only produce guilt. We don't have to fix or take care of people with our words. We can't expect others to take care of us with words either. We can settle for being heard and accepted, and we can respectfully listen to what others have to say. Hinting at what we need doesn't work. Others can't read our minds, and they're likely to resent our indirectness. The best way to take responsibility for what we want is to ask for it directly, and we can insist on directness from others. If we need to say no to a particular request, we can. If someone is trying to control us through a conversation, we can refuse to participate. Acknowledging feelings such as disappointment or anger directly, instead of making others guess at our feelings or having our feelings come out in other ways, is part of responsible communication. If we don't know what we want to say, we can say that too. We can ask for information and use words to forge a closer connection, but we don't have to take people around the block with our conversation. We don't have to listen to or participate in nonsense. We can say what we want and stop when we're done. Today, I will communicate clearly and directly in my conversations with others. I will strive to avoid manipulation, indirect, or guilt-producing statements. I can be tactful and gentle whenever possible, and I can be assertive if necessary.
So, Kath, thanks for that opening charge. What I want to tell our listeners tonight is here's the general outline. We've already done our little skit there, kind of modeled for you some bad communication.
Sue and Dan.
We're going to talk now about some general styles of communication, okay? And then we're going to talk about where the attic may be coming from in your life. So if you understand where they're coming from, it may modify and alter the way we communicate.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We're going to talk about some bad communication, you know, like phrases that we have grown up to use that phrases shouldn't, that we probably shouldn't be using because it's just going to be inflammatory and it's going to minimize the success in our communication. Then we're going to talk about good ideas on how to communicate and work with the recovering addict in your life. All right. So let's start with this. So we're going to start with some general styles of communication. So, Kath, start us off with, like, when we think of styles, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so we have here that there's four styles of communication. And the first one is clear and direct communication. And so what that means is when we're talking, the message is stated plainly and directly to the appropriate person. An example of that would be the father. There's a father with his son and he's dealing with him taking out the trash. And a clear and direct communication would be, son, I'm disappointed that you forgot to take out the trash today without my having to remind you. So that's the first clear and direct communication. Then we have clear and indirect. So in this one here, the message is clear, but it's not directed to the person for whom it's intended. So in the same example as above, the father might say, it's disappointing when people forget to complete their chores. And the son might not know who he's talking about. So that's the clear and indirect communication.
Yeah, and that now, so that's clear. Now we're going with masked. So the communication is masked, but it still may be direct. Okay, so for instance, the message is unclear because it's masked. It's masked in the way we state it. The words that we're using, phrases that we're going to talk about later that we're using, it masks the message. But who it's directed to is clear. Remember, this is the father talking to the son. So, for instance, a masked direct means it's going to clearly show he's talking to the son, but the message unclear. For instance, this time the father may say, son, people just don't work as hard as they used to. So there it is. It's clear that he's directing it to his son, but it's masked. And so, yeah, okay. So people don't work as hard. So you're not bringing up about him, or I mean his garbage, and that he failed to do it. You see what I'm saying? But you, you did identify son. Now, the next one is masked and indirect. So that's both. That means it. Who are you talking to and what is really the message? Now, watch how far this is from the first message. And this time it would read something like this. The father to the son would say, the youth of today are very lazy. So yeah. Who is that directed to? It's about the youth. It's not to your son. So you're having a communication with your son and you've gone all the way down to so vague, so abstract that the son's not going to get. So it's masked and it's indirect. I'm not talking directly to my son about an issue I have with him. And even the message about him taking out the garbage is completely lost. It has nothing to do with it. The youth of today are very lazy.
So, Bill, where do you think we all fall into these? You know, like, it's like, I think maybe we go between the clear and indirect and the masked and direct. Because, you know, to be clear and direct seems like it might be a little bit harder.
Yeah, in this case, the clear and direct is the correct way to do it,
yeah.
Right? I'm disappointed that you forgot to take out the trash today without my having to remind you. That's
yeah.
the clearest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we just seem to be so vague in our conversations so often. Yeah, we're giving indirect messages. That's what they're actually called, indirect message.
Yeah.
Trying to send you a message.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say it directly to you, so it's like indirect.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
We're kind of more indirect about these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are the four styles of communication there.
We're going to talk about five essential skills. So we talked about four styles. Now let's say five essential skills for effective communication. This could be used with your addict. It could be in life in general. For instance, let me give you an example. An essential skill in communication would be assertiveness. I need to be assertive in my communication. What's that mean? I need to be honest and straightforward. That is not the same as aggressive, which would just blow people out of the water the way I delivered. You continue to listen to the show and you'll see what I mean by assertive compared to aggressive. Because I think you understand aggressive when you call the other person names, you're worthless, no good. You know, you're murdering the family here. You're killing us all. And That's a fighting word.
That's definitely aggressive. You know?
Honest and straightforward would be that you have confidence. And if I have confidence in how I feel and what I'm thinking, for instance, I could say no. I have confidence to say no. I'm assertive. I'm going to say no, I can't. I'm not going to do that. You know, if your addict asks you to pay their bill or you know, pay their court fee, and it's like you could be assertive enough to say, no, I won't. And you know what I'm talking about, because there's some of you out there who say to yourself, I could never say no to my son or my daughter.
Exactly.
So assertive means I will learn to do that. I will. Now, there's tools to be assertive. How do I make, how can I improve my ability to be assertive? For instance, you can make specific requests, you see. So understand what your needs are, what your boundaries are, and what your limits are. And right now we're considering next month to be boundaries, so we'll enjoy doing that one. So if I understand my boundaries are, I don't want to continue to give my addict money because I know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Then you know that's a specific, and you can make that a specific request. You can establish eye contact. Make sure you look him in the face because you're calm. You want to say, refrain from being overly apologetic. Again, those of you who feel like you could never say no, you're always saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that it inconvenienced you. I'm sorry how much this put you out. Oh, I'm sorry. And meantime, your addict is playing you anyway just to get the money to go get the drugs. And well, then, go ahead.
Or another way about that, being overly apologetic, I know for myself, when I see somebody get hurt from something I say, then I tend to take it back and say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Because I don't like to see people get hurt.
Can I play with the word hurt?
Yeah.
Because you said, when I see people get hurt.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if they're really hurt or they're angry or mad because they're not getting what they want.
That could be.
And they say, oh, you hurt me.
Right.
You know, you're hurting me because you won't pay my bill.
Yeah.
You know, you're making my life terrible because you won't pay the court fee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. But that's because you broke the law. You need to be responsible for paying your court fee. But I feel bad and guilty when I say no.
Exactly.
And that's what you're saying, Kay. You can relate to that.
Yeah.
Because you feel bad, even in our relationship, if you feel like, that I would be upset.
Mm-hmm.
See, I like the word upset. Mm-hmm. I'd be upset if you didn't do something or if you said something.
If I said something, yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, so you could determine what your specific requests are. You could refrain from being overly apologetic and then use the I feel statements. They're called I statements. I feel. For instance, I feel it eliminates you from blaming them.
Usually you say you did this,
you're
did
doing
that.
This to the family.
I wish,
you're doing this to me. You're doing.
Yeah.
And so instead you could use I statements such as, I feel sad about this whole thing. So that's about you.
Mm-hmm.
I feel sad. You're not blaming the addict. You're not telling the addict your fault or whatever. I feel sad. I feel disappointed. Right now I feel attacked because that addict's coming at you with 110% energy, aggressive, assertive.
Normally you would be saying, you're attacking me. But instead you could say, I feel attacked.
Yeah, you're attacking me. Yeah, because then you're going to say, I'm not attacking you. I'm just telling you right now that this is bothering me because you won't pay my bill.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, whoa, calm down. I feel attacked.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, you're attacking because I'm going to deny it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not attacking you.
Yeah.
You know, as I'm yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
I statements. I really need you to take that issue up with so-and-so and not me.
Well, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people like use this indirect and masked communication, and they're just throwing blanket statements out there. You know, a friend of mine, her parents talk about each other.
Yeah.
And so here she is, you know, just hanging out, and her mom will just say some weird things about her dad. And so,
like, to her,
yeah, to her, and like, what is she supposed to do with that?
Yeah,
so that would be really a good one where she could say, you know, I really would need you to take that up with dad.
Yeah, and actually, the phrase for that is called a triangle.
Yeah.
A triangle is where you're saying something. Like, for instance, I'm saying something here to my wife about this third party. If I have an issue with
issue with
that, I have an issue with this third party, the addict. and that the addict's not paying their bill, then I shouldn't be complaining to my other son about the addict. It's not fair. Mm-hmm. Or my other daughter, my other family member.
Correct.
I may have a conversation with my spouse about my addict's son or daughter, but that's different. But I'm talking about a third party sending messages. You know, I'm talking to my wife about a friend of mine. So I'm hoping my wife will tell my friend.
That's a triangle. That's definitely a triangle.
And you want to stay away from that because that's poor communication skills.
Yeah.
You're responsible for your feelings. And that's why the I statement's so important. I feel attacked. I feel frustrated. You know, that's a good one because with the addict, how many times are we frustrated? But make it an I statement. I'm frustrated. Stop attacking the addict and making the statements that make the addict go on the defensive.
Yeah, because normally we say you made me feel this way or whatever.
Yeah.
Another skill for effective communication is positive self-talk. And this one's a big one for me because I've had a lot of struggles with negative self-talk and judgment. And so we need to challenge our negative self-talk with positive affirmations and praise for steps towards our recovery, whether we're, you know, family, friends, addict, anybody. Turn this voice into your biggest supporter. So positive self-talk is very, very good.
You got some examples? Like what? Can you give me an example when you were negative self-talk?
Say I ate a little bit more than I wanted to at a particular time.
Okay.
So I could sit there and say, what a stupid thing. I don't have any willpower. And why would I do that? And next time I'll do better. And, or I could say, well, yeah, you know, I would have been nicer to, you know, eat a little less, but you know, that's okay. I'm human. And
well, maybe the positive affirmation could have also been is that I didn't eat four times as much.
Yeah. See?
So I ate two times as much.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to deal with my eating habits, then I could turn around and say, you know what, I'm going to deal with my eating habits. But I don't have to beat myself up to make myself feel less than that at this moment. Mm-hmm. I don't have a healthy eating habit at that moment.
Yeah, because really I have found that any negative talking or judging about yourself doesn't really make change happen.
It
really doesn't, and it actually makes you feel worse, and then you may tend to spiral even more. So another essential skill for communication is to read social cues. So we need to learn how to read between the lines by observing body language, facial expressions, and tone of voice if we want to fully understand other people. That's why, you know, emails and texts are a little bit harder because something may sound different in a text, but when you see a person talk and their body language, it's a lot different, you know.
Yeah, I think you should be aware of those. You know, you have the what do we say? You had the spoken word, you have your body language,
mm-hmm.
you have tone of voice,
mm-hmm.
and you have eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things communicate a message to people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you got to watch your – matter of fact, so make a conscious decision to watch – yourself as you interact with your addict.
Mm-hmm.
Catch yourself taking your tone. Say, you know what? You know, when you're yelling.
That's the next thing is to watch your tone.
Yeah, your
tone,
not
theirs.
So the
first one was to read their tone and their, you know, to communicate well. But then it's also to watch our own tone.
Because the addict's tone may be bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Your addict's body language may be bad.
Mm-hmm.
They may be all puffed up, their shoulders out, their arms flailing, their face is going to look red and angry and mad, they're yelling at a high tone. So they may be failing in all the communication skills. It's mm-hmm. really about you handling you.
Yes.
I said it a second ago. You're responsible for your feelings, you're responsible for your tone, you're responsible for, you know.
Absolutely. And that's what, you know, that's what Families in Recovery is all about, is we're giving you tools.
Yeah.
You may not be able to change the addict or the recovering addict or other people in your life, but we're giving you a lot of tools to take care of yourself and to learn to communicate in a healthy way in this particular program.
And then give and take. Communication's about giving and taking. If you noticed, when we're getting in arguments and fights with our addicts, it's because both of us are fighting to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us are fighting to win our point. Both of us are fighting to get the other to succumb to us. So it's really not a healthy give and take. A really healthy give and take is when you're sitting with your friend, you're having a nice conversation, and you both are contributing. You're both listening to each other. You're both enjoying the conversation, and you notice you don't normally escalate. It's nice and relaxed. So think about this. When others listen to you and they offer support to you, then you should be doing the same to them. So it's mm-hmm. a give and take. It can't be just have it your way all the time. For instance, let's say your doubt about what was just said. So something was just said, your doubt about what was said. You're still not sure what's making your partner upset. Ask. It's worse to assume what the issue is. So many times we misunderstand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then run with
person,
it.
Yeah, and we run with it. Mm-hmm. The person made a statement, I thought I heard you say mm-hmm. this, just like the Sue and Dan thing, right? and then Kathy's running with Sue and Dan's story, and I'm confused as could be. You know, I should have stopped that conversation. Say, hold on, time out. Let me ask you something. Did I just hear you say Sue and Dan? Yeah. So the point is, we need to make sure that we clearly understand what's happening.
Yeah.
If there's confusion in our face, watching for that body language, confusion in her face, stop. Stop and say, what's going on here? Because mm-hmm. then we'll jump to the wrong conclusions. Now, also what happens is, as I was just explaining, as we're in conversations, you ever notice they escalate? Mm-hmm. Especially with the attic. It gets higher and higher, heated and heated. We're yelling at each other. We're not hearing each other because I'm trying to win my point. And mm-hmm. they're trying to win their point. That they mm-hmm. need the drugs or money or whatever, bail them out of the hardships that's upon them right now. And you're screaming and yelling because it's the 25th time you're doing it and you're sick and tired of it. But before you shout, call a timeout. So I guess what I'm saying is when the conversation starts to escalate, the addict's not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to say, timeout. As a matter of fact, my wife and I, you and I have done this.
Mm-hmm.
Where we just mm-hmm. turn around and say, you know what, let's leave it there for now. We got to move on and just call a timeout. Mm-hmm. Because anyway, I'll tell you why. Because if you start arguing, people stop listening. You're yelling at the addict. The addict's yelling at you. Guess what? Neither one
Nobody's
is really
listening
to it. So call it quits for now. Don't be afraid to call it quits.
Yeah. And the last one that we have for skills for effective communication is empathy. It's one of the most fundamental human capacities and one of the first ones to get hijacked by addiction, but I also think it gets hijacked by codependency majorly. So it involves stepping into someone else's shoes and trying to understand their thoughts and feelings.
I
think we all need to take a moment and see the situation from the other person's point of view. We may not understand addiction, but if the addict is talking to us, we might want to listen because they can teach us things. We can learn from them.
Well, and one thing that it brings up for me is a phrase that I use often, which is to be able to acknowledge somebody else's reality.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so empathy, talking about seeing a situation from the other person's point of view. So, for instance, the addict's coming to your place. The addict's asking for money or being bailed out or asking for you to pay the ticket again for the 25th, 100th time. So, of course, your temper's short already because you're aggravated. And, of course, in reality, you're aggravated at yourself because you haven't set a healthy boundary and says no more. But regardless of that statement, you're angry. Well, then see the point of view from the addict's point of view. You say, what are you talking about? The addict comes up to you and says, Mom, Dad, I got a ticket again. Can you help me out here? And you try to set your boundary, say, I don't, my money's short. I don't think so. Not this time. And of course, the conversation escalates and escalates. So you want to see it from the other point of view. So then what you do is you turn around and say to the addict, look, son, daughter, I hear, because I can hear your tone, but I don't have to say I hear your tone. I just say, I hear that this is very frustrating for you.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that you're very upset that you have a ticket over your head. See, what I'm doing
that's
is I'm
kind of like mirroring back.
Mirroring
also.
Back, acknowledging their reality.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you have to fix their reality. It means that you hear them and that you're sympathizing and empathize that this must be very difficult for you because it's the 12th ticket you've had in the last 12 months. So I'm very sorry. It's got to be very frustrating. I hear you very frustrated with you. See what I'm doing? I'm empathizing with them. It doesn't mean I have to take it away. It doesn't mean I have to fix it, but I'm empathizing with them. Mm-hmm. And that helps. That helps. It diffuses it. So that's the five essential skills: assertiveness, positive self-talking, reading the social clues, the body language, and so on. It's a give-and-take relationship in your communications. And if you start raising it to anger, you're going to stop listening to each other. And the last one is empathy, being able to at least reflect back to somebody and empathize with them that how they must be feeling. It doesn't mean that maybe they deserve to feel the way. If he's one who broke the law, then he's going to feel frustrated that it's his 12th ticket. Yeah, I understand. I hear what you're saying. You don't have to tell him it's your fault because you're the one who broke the law for the 12th time.
You don't have to tell him that.
You don't have to tell him that, but you can empathize with him. All right, there's the five skills we have. Let's go into the spiritual section. And today we're going to talk about communication. I got a couple verses from the Torah, the Old Testament, from our Jewish friends, and something from our New Testament for our Christian friends. And so I want to start with the Old Testament. King David in Psalms 39:1 said, "I will watch my ways that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle." And what he means is the horse's bridle. So David was very aware that communication and speech really needs to be watched and checked. In the New Testament, we have in Colossians 3:8 through 17 says this, "But now you must renounce them all." What? Anger, passion, ill will must be put away, slandering, foul talk, so that they may never soil your lips. Do not lie to one another, but strip off all these old self-doings, the things that come so natural to us, and put on a new self, which is continually made according to the likeness of the Creator God, our higher power. Therefore, as God's people, clothe yourself with tenderness, kindness, humility, gentleness, good temper. Bear with one another, forgive each other. If any of you have a grievance against somebody or an issue with somebody, just as God, our higher power, and Christ forgave you, so you forgive. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your heart. And whatever you do in word and deed, do all to the glory of God. Ephesians says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth." I want you to be patient with yourself, because we have looked at ourselves and we know that we may be like using profanity as a stream of water, put people down. And so we've had corrupt communications. But a corrupt communication does not only mean words. Body language could communicate corruptness, an evil look, body language. It includes impure hints, underhanded insinuations like saying you're no good or you should just go kill yourself. So corrupt communications is more than just words. Unless these feelings to speak these bad thoughts are instantly resisted, these could lead into despair and unhealthy actions. Every member in a family, every individual has the duty of putting away corrupt speech, nasty speech, vile speech. When in a company of those who do have a corrupt dialogue, and it doesn't mean just cursing. I'm talking about corrupt dialogue. It's just negative. It's not good. It's unhealthy. They're forcing their way. They're mean. They're nasty. It's our duty to try to change the conversation, if it's possible, by changing the tone. Look, by the help of God, our higher power, we should quietly drop words or introduce subjects that will turn the conversation into a profitable channel. It's the work of the parents to train their children in proper habits of speech. The best school for this is the home. And I understand that we might not have been the best role models, but you got to start somewheres, and you could start tonight. From the earliest years, the children should be taught to speak respectfully and lovingly to their parents and to one another. They should be taught that only words of gentleness, truth, and purity must pass from their lips. Let the parents themselves be daily learners and also be examples that teach their children the use of sound speech that cannot be condemned, Titus 2:8. This is one of the greatest and most highest responsibilities of a parent's duty. Our words should be such as to help and to encourage one another, not tear down, not to be mean, nasty, and vile. Far more than we do, we need to speak of the precious chapters in our own experiences, of those successes that we have had in changing in our lives, learning how to communicate clearly and properly. We should speak of the mercy and loving kindness of God, our higher power, that He wants to restore us to sanity, of His matchless depths of His love. If the mind and heart are full of the love of our higher power that we have come to believe, it will be revealed in our conversation. It will not be a difficult matter to impart then these spiritual truths and things that we have learned, noble aspirations, clear thoughts, clear truth, unselfish purposes. Our words will reveal the character of our heart. And when this is revealed, when our higher power then is revealed in our speech and we've shown a transformation in our lives, that will have power to change those around us, to lead them to the higher power. It'll model to them that there is a higher power. There is a solution to their life. And this could truly restore us and them to sanity, to health, and a victorious life. I hope you got something out of tonight's spiritual section. And let's move on to our next section. Understanding where the addict may be coming from and how that affects their ability to communicate with us. In any communication, whether it's the addict or not, where the person is and where you are emotionally, mentally, mm-hmm. spiritually, even physically can affect where you're coming from in the communication.
Yes.
If I'm having a bad day, something bad happened to me. For a woman, it could be that time of the month. For the man who's unsympathetic about that time of the month, no. But the point is, many things can affect where we're at. And we're focusing on some of the emotional platforms that we work from an addict. Talk to us a little bit where the addict may be coming from, because we know the addict is using. They haven't been able to break the habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some of the things that they're dealing with? Where are they coming from?
Well, they're definitely coming from low self-esteem. A lot of times they're worried about what other people are thinking of them, and they feel unworthy of any kind of love that they get.
And they may not even show that to you.
No, they may
not communicate that, because they're coming up to you normally in a crisis.
Right.
So they're in a fight mode.
Yeah.
But we're letting you know behind the scenes. They have low self-esteem. They got issues with who they are and what's going on.
And perfectionism, I think that's a big one for addicts, because they often put pressure on themselves to be perfect. And when they find out they can't be perfect, that's when they fall into their addict. They sometimes have to learn to have acceptance of self and others, that we're all flawed and they're flawed and we're flawed and it's okay. And another thing is shame. Most addicts feel a lot of shame, especially when they first get into recovery, because then they start to face the consequences of their past behavior and, you know, who they hurt. And it can be pretty paralyzing. And sometimes that's the loop that gets them back into addiction.
Yeah.
Shame. Because they can't handle what they've done. And so we, as the codependents or the family members, need to be careful what we're saying to them, because they're already starting to feel really guilty.
Yeah, so we could project onto them shame
and
self-esteem issues.
Yes, we can.
Instead of dealing with the issue.
Yep.
Deal with the issue, not about who they are. Mm-hmm. I don't have to shame them.
Yes.
I don't have to, low self-esteem. Some of the things that we say to them that are very debasing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that said, right? So we turn around and say, oh, the addict of my life, my child, my son, my daughter has low self-esteem and shame. And that may try to elicit upon your sympathies and empathies, right? Well, don't forget, because the other thing is where they may be coming from is dishonesty. You know, so they may come up to you with this, mommy, I'm so upset. I got another ticket. I don't know what to do. I'm going to lose my job and I can't afford to pay. And it's just drawing on your heartstrings. And the whole time, they want you to give them money because they're going to go buy drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. They're playing their little game. They're dishonest. You know what? It comes naturally to the addict. And here's a problem. Dishonesty is the enemy of effective communication. So you have to understand, in your communication with the addict, it could be a one-way street of healthy communication. You're going to learn how to keep your I statements going. You're going to learn how to keep your body language in check and your tone in check. but not the addict. And matter of fact, the addict is going to be looking at how to be dishonest and to manipulate and move you so they could be successful in getting what they want. At least you understand that true intimacy cannot be developed unless it's genuine intimacy, which truly says how we are. Now, you ready for this? I also believe us codependents aren't true.
No.
And to be intimate. Because, see, what we're doing
is... We're not honest either.
We're not honest either because if I was honest, I would have to say that I pay the money to you because it's guilt and shame on my own behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Because my marriage failed and I feel bad. Or I must have did something wrong when you were a child and I feel guilt and shame mm-hmm. from that. My own self-esteem and shame issues.
So then you're really doing
I'm not honest
for
either.
Yourself.
I'm doing it for myself. To redeem myself.
Yeah.
To think that I could pay or you know give in to them would help me feel better about myself and it doesn't. And then the last one, which affects communication and where your addict may be coming from, is lack of boundaries. You know, addicts have difficulty establishing healthy boundaries. And so they may trample upon your rights to be happy. When they say yes, they really may mean no. And they're going to take advantage of you. So again, in communication, you have to be aware this is where your addict's going to come from. Low self-esteem, perfectionism, shame, dishonesty, lack of boundaries. All of that's going to affect healthy communications. There's nothing you could do about that from the perspective of having true intimacy with the addict. But at least if you're aware of these traits, you'll be able to position yourself in relation to them, but deal with you being healthy in your interactions and communications.
Absolutely.
So we want to talk then about... Well, okay, so Bill, I'm dealing with this addict with all of these issues. They're coming from this very unhealthy platform that they're working from. Well, you and I, as the people who are working with these addicts, we turn around and we say phrases or we have a concept of techniques that you and I currently use don't help intimacy. For instance, if we come from the platform of truth that we are right and they are wrong, we are right, they are wrong. Now, you're going to say, well, they are wrong. They broke the law and so on. That is correct. They might broke the law and they owe the penalty for that. But if I come from the point of view that we are right and they are wrong, we may find out that it's not necessarily true. Let me give you an example. I had a friend who was in a hospital the other day. And this friend was very upset with what was going on in the hospital. And this friend turned around and called their spouse. And the spouse said to them, just transfer to another hospital. A friend of mine said, I'm not ready to do that. You know what the spouse said? In that case, do not call me back. I'm not coming to the hospital. You take care of yourself. Goodbye.
Oh, wow.
How's that?
That was a pretty good boundary, actually.
No, I didn't think so.
Oh.
No, I'm your spouse. If my wife is in turmoil in a hospital, I'm coming to help you.
Oh, I didn't understand. Yeah,
no.
What
I'm saying is that person turned around in the hospital and this person's telling them the solution. Transfer. I didn't call you to tell me the solution. I called you as my spouse to tell you that I'm having a hard time here.
Oh, I see.
Would you come and support me?
Okay,
well, so they're calling and say, I'm getting a lousy service here. I'm upset. Mm-hmm. Would you, come here to support me? Well, the spouse just immediately jumped to transfer.
Oh, he wanted to just fix it.
And okay. So, and that person says, I'm not there yet to transfer. Mm-hmm. Well, then don't call me back. Mm-hmm. So what that says is, my answer was right. Get out. Well, who says your answer is right? Because you're ready for what happened? The next thing that happened is, the president and vice president of the hospital came down to see her because she called. And when she explained what happened, they found out that the doctor was inappropriate. The doctor did not do what they were supposed to do. That's what they found out.
Wow.
So if she would have transferred immediately, that doctor would never have been found out.
Mm.
And then, and as far as the spouse and the relationship was not an equal relationship, the spouse is dictating what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we talked about give and take in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So that spouse thought, I'm right, you're wrong. Can you imagine you're in a hospital mm-hmm. with a dramatic illness and your spouse just basically says, if you're not going to do what I say, then I'm not coming.
Hmm.
What I'm thinking about is when you and I have conversations, how mm-hmm. many times have you said to me,
I don't need you to fix me.
I don't need you to fix me. I'm not asking you to tell me
mm-hmm.
the answer to mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying here. So I'm right, you're wrong. And how many times you say to me, Bill, you come across so authoritarian, like you have the answer.
Yeah, your opinions are facts.
You hear that statement? My opinions come across as facts.
And I have to negate that because his opinions are opinions. But the way he says them, they're facts.
And do you do that with your addict? I'm going to tell you what you got to do. You got to do this, 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 this. Guess what? There's about 20 different ways to take actions in life. And your thought is only one of 20 ways.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? I could go into rehab. I could go see a counselor. I could go... I could turn around and go to the hospital. I could go to AA meetings. I can go, you see what I'm saying? I got four or five choices right off the bat as an addict. And you may make suggestions, but to think that your way is the only way is not good. Blame is another problem, right? The problem is all their fault. They're all wrong. I'm not at fault. You're not at fault. You're not to blame. Maybe you're some of the blame of this because you're not setting healthy boundaries,
mm-hmm.
you see?
Mm-hmm.
And then do you ever play the martyr? You ever turn around and say, oh, we're the victim. Oh, life is constantly doing bad things to us. Oh, life, always bad, bad, bad. Things are always happening to us. Look at it. It's happening again. How many times you talk like that around people? I can only hang around with people so long who are in this like negative spiral,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So some other ones are that we put the person down. We call them a name or saying they always do this or they always do that or they never do this or that. Another one is you end up feeling hopelessness and you just tell them, oh, I give up. There's no point in trying anyway. Or you get demanding and say you're entitled to better treatment, but not asking in a clear and direct way for what we want. So, you know, we demand something instead of ask for what we want. Another one is denial. When we're really angry and upset, we insist we're not angry, hurt, when we really are.
Yeah, and so then when we're really angry or hurt, what we do is we go into passive-aggressive. Mm. I don't know if you've ever heard of passive-aggressive.
Oh, definitely.
Passive-aggressive is, I don't like what's happening, but instead of addressing it by saying, I don't like what's happening, instead I may, like, pout. You know, all right. Well, that, you know, I'm just pouting or withdrawing. You stop talking, you kind of walk away, and they're like, Well, wait, the conversation's not over. And you're blackballing the conversation by just pouting or walk away, refusing to discuss the issues. That's called passive aggressive. Passive aggressive, I'm going to burn your dinner because I'm mad at you. Instead of addressing, I'm mad at you. Self-blame, how many times have we played that game? Instead of dealing with the problem, we act as if we're a terrible person. Right? So again, I don't like the way this is happening. I don't like the way my husband's talking to the addict's son. They're fighting and arguing. I don't like it. So I turn around and just take that self-blaming role. You know, I'm a terrible person. I failed as a mother. I have failed terribly as a father. You know, that's not the issue right now. The issue is they got the traffic ticket or they got the ticket or they got the court fine and how are we going to handle that? You don't like the way the conversation's going. Instead of addressing that and saying, I don't like the way the conversation's going, can we tone it down or something like that? Instead, you're just play emotional games with self-blame. And the following one is helping, trying to solve the problems. You know what my wife and I call it? The savior complex. How many times Kathy and I have gotten a conversation and she's had to say to me
a lot,
stop. Mm-hmm. I'm sharing where I'm coming from, Bill, right now, just to share where I'm coming from.
I just want to share my feelings and just my thoughts, tell you what's going on.
Yeah, I don't need you to solve them.
Mm-hmm.
But we are so used to analyzing everything and everybody that as soon as they're talking, we're already thinking up of a solution for them.
We have to fix it because we're uncomfortable because they have a problem. So we just think, oh, we got to fix it so they're okay.
Oh, say that again.
We are
so uncomfortable.
We're uncomfortable with another person being uncomfortable, having a problem. And so we just want to fix it for them so they're fine and then we're fine.
Yeah, because we're not fine when they're not fine.
Right.
Wow, there's a play on words. There's communication.
Yeah. So another thing that we do is we get sarcastic. I'm real good at sarcasm. The words or the tone of your voice is tense or hostile, but you're not really acknowledging what you're really feeling. Another thing we do is we suggest scapegoating, that we suggest the other person is a source of all problems, defensiveness, refusing to admit wrongdoing or imperfection. So we say, we're fine, you're the problem. Counterattack. We respond to criticism with more criticism. So, you know, somebody says something wrong about me and then I say something, criticize them back. And another one is diversion. Instead of dealing with feelings in the here and now, you list grievances about all the past stuff that came up. So those are some things that we as codependents do that really don't help in communication.
Yeah, very good. How can you change these bad phrases? How do we then put them into positive phrases and be able to communicate with our addict? We had talked about the phrases that we use and the techniques that we use that aren't the best in helping the communication with our addict. The first one I think about is, how do I support the addict without letting myself down? What do I mean by not let myself down? Don't I feel like the addict's taking advantage of me? And don't I feel that really the reason the addict is taking advantage of me is because of me? I'm letting myself down. I don't set the healthy boundary. So how do I then support him or her without letting myself down, because I'm so willing to give in to their demands? I'm actually violating myself. That's what causes all your anger. That's what causes all your frustrations. That's what causes you so much low self-esteem. You feel terrible about yourself, is because you're stuck in this quandary of wanting to help them, but you're helping them through sacrificing yourself, violating yourself, because you don't think you're allowed to take care of yourself by setting those healthy boundaries. And so, you know, how do I support them? And that's what we're talking about here tonight, is being able to support them in our communication. And we're going to talk about some of those coming up, showing unconditional love, supporting their process, doing it their way, and so on. So we're going to talk about that right now. All right, for example, how do I support them without letting myself down? First of all, if I'm going to support them, I want to be kind to them. I want to be kind to the addict. You see, if I'm frustrated or angry or mad, that's not kind to them. That means I'm mixing my emotions up with the situation. I need to show them I care through my behavior. Mm-hmm. So if I'm turning around, yelling, screaming because of my frustration, then I just need to identify my frustration, and it would stop me from yelling and screaming. So I just need to say to them, I feel frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I need to show you that I care by me controlling my behavior.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. So if I could always act in kindness, always act in compassion. You say, I can't do that. I get frustrated. It's the 25th traffic ticket. Well, why are you personalizing that? Well, because they're coming to me for money. So because you don't want to say no then? So look, I've said this 100 times to my wife. Anybody could ask anything of me that they want. You come up to me and say, can I have your car? Can you pay my 25th traffic ticket? Can you bail me out of jail for the 125th time? They could ask me anything they want. I act as if that's a violation. They're not allowed to ask that to me. So I become frustrated, mad, angry, and my behavior reflects that back to them. As a codependent, I'm constantly attacking. You see? So I need to change that behavior. I need to act in a behavior that communicates to them that I care for them. And so also I want to be able to stick with the discussion at hand. How many times have you thrown the past in? This is your 25th time. It was only last month that it happened. You know, and then they're being defensive. They're arguing about last month wasn't really my fault. And then now you're off track. So how am I supporting them if I'm constantly bringing up old garbage like that? And then in the end, another technique about how do I support them and still without let myself down is, I don't need to give them advice. For some reason, you've got in your head that they have to listen to you and that you have all the right answers, or at least the right answer at that moment. So you're giving them advice of what they need to do. Why don't you tell them to go ask somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to AA meeting or NA meeting. Go ask them. I don't have the answer for you.
Exactly.
I'm not going to pay for it this time. I support you.
Those of us closest to them don't have the answers for them.
No, we don't have
the answers. We just think that we do.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so another one is, listen to the person with the addiction at least as much as you talk, which that's a real challenge. A person, you know, anybody's going to be more willing to talk with you and to confide in you if you really listen to them, you know, without interrupting or criticizing. I mean, during the conversation, the biggest problem is that nobody really listens to the other person, and everyone is just merely waiting for his or her turn to talk. So it's a really big practice to just try to listen and let a little space go after you're done listening and then talk. And active listening really means that you stop doing everything else too, like texting or checking your emails or doing your nails or whatever. Stop and listen. And another one is first to listen and acknowledge the other person's feeling also. Before you jump ahead and start to say what you want to say, you know, acknowledge what the other person is saying and their feeling so that they can tell that you got it. Another one is be consistent through your actions and your words, and also be predictable. You know, one day, you know, don't come home and scream, yell, and holler, and the next day you're all calm and they're your best friend or whatever. Just try to be predictable and consistent with how you are with them.
Here's a good one, and I got a good example too. Showing unconditional love. So I can show unconditional love, and it doesn't mean I have to give in to their demands. Again, I can't emphasize enough, as codependents, we blame them for our misery. In reality, we don't set healthy boundaries because we don't believe we can or allowed to set healthy boundaries, because that would communicate to them we don't love them. And that's not true. Let me give you a good example. I had a friend, an addict, and what happened is this friend teamed up with another friend. This other friend was not a good friend. He shouldn't have went back to this friend. And so this other friend was burglarizing. And so my friend happened to pick him up in his car, and the police had it on video. So now my friend's in jail, and his buddy's in jail. And I go to the police department, and the officer says to me, "Your friend is going to take the fall for his friend." I'm like, "What?" So I went and talked to my friend, and I said to him, I said, "Look, buddy, I want to say, you can't take the fall for this other person." He said, "Well, the other person has children and I don't." I said, No. That's not right." I said, "Here's what's right. That friend's going to have to explain to his children why he was not there for them. So you have the ability to say, no, you're not going to take the fall. You have the ability to say, no, I'm not going to bail you out." So he's like, "Really?" I said, "Yes. Look, and here's what you could do. You could go up to your friend and say, I love you. I care for you. But I'm not going to take the fall for you." You could do the same thing with your addict. You go up to say, "Look, I love you. I care for you. But I'm not in an emotional place or space that I'm going to bail you out. So I support you. I'll keep you in my prayer. I'll check in with you, see how you're doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." Another thing you want to do is consider the person you're dealing with, their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, where they're at. Kathy kind of mentioned that already. So if you could acknowledge those, I see that you're very stressed about this. I see you're very upset that I said I'm not going to pay your ticket. I understand that. I could see, and I can understand how you would feel that way. It doesn't mean you have to change your position. I understand you're very upset. I could see you're very upset. I'm going to trust that the higher power is going to work it out for you. As me bailing you out for the last 24 times has not helped, I made a decision that I'm not, for my sake, I'm not going to bail you out, and hope that our higher power, your my higher power, will be able to work out your solution here for you through another means other than me. I'll be here to support you in prayer. I'll be here to support you in phone calls. I'll be here to support you in letter write anyway, but I'm not going to through monetary means. So support their process then, because that means now their process doesn't include you. You just took yourself out of their process. So support their process. How do they want to go? How do they want to look at getting themselves help? AA, NA, counseling, institutionalization. They just want to walk the streets, however they want to do it. I'm behind you. I support you, and I support your process. I'm just letting you know where my place is in your process. So, you know, you're trying to do it their way and support them in doing it their way. You're going to have healthy boundaries in your house. But be flexible for them, because if they may say, "Well, I'd rather go to AA meetings than go counseling." Well, then start going to AA meetings. "Well, I'd rather go get institutionalized than do AA meetings." Fine, then go get. I don't care. What do you think is going to help you in your solution? And they're going to say, well, what's going to help me in my solution? You pay for my ticket. Well, I'm sorry. I love you, sweetheart. But that's the one thing I said that I'm not going to be able to support in is financially. So these are just some ideas for you about how to support and not sacrifice yourself.
And another way is to seek information on where to get help. One of the biggest things that help the addict get better is when we take care of ourselves and when we seek. So focus on getting help for yourself. Get information. Get educated. Go to Nar-Anon. Go to the program. You know, as well as helping us to cope with the situation, when they see that we're improving with our moods and functioning, and that can inspire them, and then they can see that change is possible. And also, always let an addict know your limits. As long as someone with an addiction does not know how much their behavior bothers you, they have no reason to change. So be really clear with them about what you expect from them, what your limits are.
Yeah, the I statements. Go back and listen to this program over a couple times so you can see all. There's so many things in here that's buried so deep. You got to go through and listen to each one, maybe pause it, and then kind of let that soak into your head because we only have so much time going over so much. So in closing, I want to talk about communication skills and family recovery, which we just did. And what I want to be able to encourage you to do is to communicate frequently. Get together and talk. Don't wait until a crisis to talk. Check in with each other regularly, your spouse, your addict in their life. Just check in where they're at, not to fix them, not to give them advice. I'm just checking in and see how you're doing. I'm just calling in to have a prayer with you. I'm just calling to let you know that I'm thinking about you. So communicate frequently in the family. Check-ins are good. Find regular time to talk. Talk around a table. Talk about on a Sunday afternoon when everybody's hanging around the house. And if you're thinking about it, you want to hold quality conversations. And we gave you a bunch of tips here how to hold quality conversations. Go back and listen to them over and over. And focus on keeping yourself in check and you being healthy. Not them. They're not going to be healthy. But what you can give them is love, unconditional love, encouragement. Tell them, look, I trust you as you try to figure out your solution, but I'll support you emotionally, mentally, in other ways. Build them up. Listen actively. Remember when we get in those conversations, I'm trying to get my point across, you're trying to get your point across. Instead, stop. Listen to what they're saying. If they're raising the conversation volume up, that means they feel they're not heard. Then acknowledge that you hear my. I see that you're feeling very passionate right now about this. And I just want to acknowledge that I see that's happening. See, I'm showing you I'm listening to you. And then stay positive with your family and communications that we can learn how to communicate with each other. I want you to know, all my years, my wife, I've never cursed at her. I've never in 38 years ever called my wife a derogatory name at all. Never. And it's hard for some people to believe that, but you can do it also. You can learn how to be kind, compassionate, sympathetic, and still set healthy boundaries. Let them know you love them and let the addict take the process they need to take and the road to recovery. I hope you got something out of tonight's message. We'll see you next month when we look at boundaries.